Great, thanks.
Didn't work. The drives were incorrect. The optical design was poor. It just didn't work at all. And so they had thought that this was going to be their next product, and it was a disaster. And Dick Perkin, I understand, canceled the project because John White came to him and said, this is a terrible design, and it was of no value whatsoever. So we talked Dick Perkin into agreeing to hire an inside designer, somebody who could take his original ideas and put them into a design that would actually work. And that was right at the time when I was looking for a job, and so I was interviewed by John White, and he was impressed enough by me to hire me. And I went into their little, it was a room about this side, their engineering department, and he told me what he wanted me to do, and I never didn't know a thing about infrared spectroscopy, didn't know what spectroscopy was, didn't know what infrared was. So I spent the first few months just working with him and talking about the problems, but he didn't tell me very much about the design, what its purpose was, what its direction was, and so forth. So he would sit next to me and say, I want a gearbox that has these features, and I need a thing that does this. So I would sit there and help him design those things. In about the middle of 1949, after we'd been working on this thing, I started in November 1948, he came in to my little engineering room where I was working on the board doing design stuff, and he announced that he had just quit. And he had an argument with Dick Perkin and Van Zandt Williams about something. I don't know the details of it, but they didn't see eye to eye, and he just came in and said, Vince, he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm leaving. So he got up and left, and I sat there and kind of wide-eyed saying, now what do I do? A few hours later, Van Williams came in and said, Vince, he said, we're going to have to hire another physicist to take over this project. Do you have some things to do? And I said, yeah, I got some things to do, I guess. So he left. So I sat there and I said, I guess I better learn something about infrared spectroscopy. They had a good library. They had all of the issues of the Journal of the Optical Society of America, mm-hmm. Review of Scientific Instruments, going back to the 20s. And I went into the library, and I sat there for 2 months, and I read every article on infrared spectroscopy that existed. And when I was finished, I knew a lot about it. And I went back into the room there, and I started looking at the design of the Model 21, which was just nothing much left of it. There was just some of the works I'd been doing. So I sat down, and I, 24 years old, and I completed the design. So that was a big opportunity for me as a young guy to do that. And Van Williams ignored the design of the Model 21. He didn't think it was going anyplace. He knew I was sitting in there designing stuff. He didn't know what I was doing. And Paul Wilkes was the salesman, and they were selling the Model 12C as a quantitative tool, and I never saw them. I sat in my little room designing. And at the end of about a year, I ordered up the parts, and we put together the system, and it worked. And that became the Perkin-Elmer Model 21. At that time, it was thought that was a waste of time, Van Williams didn't think it was the right design, the right thing to do, and he didn't think that I knew anything about anything, so therefore whatever I designed wouldn't work very well.
Hmm.
So I built a prototype, and they would occasionally bring in a customer, and I would run samples for them. And we had this very nice, I designed this nice recording system that would, and I actually designed the paper.
The drum. You designed
that? That, and the drive, and the drive for the pen going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I actually designed the pen. I designed everything.
Wow.
And the monochromator, or the spectrometer,
mm-hmm.
was taken from the Model 12C, was all the parts. And then one of the big problems with the system was that the infrared source didn't work. So I studied all about that, and then I designed one. It turned out to work very well because people would go for years with that source and it would never burn out, which was very, very important. And
what was that source?
It was called a Nernst glower.
Uh-huh.
And one of the problems was that if it bent or moved around, then your data was all fouled up. So I designed one that didn't move around and didn't bend, and that was optically correct and did a good job. I got into having to design accessories, microcells, gas cells. I eventually designed some gas cells that were 10 meters long that were sold to the Los Angeles Air Pollution Control District just as I could measure some of the low, small concentrations of materials they were looking for.
10 meters long.
It was a folded path. I folded the path so it would fit in the beam.
Okay.
And it bounced back and forth,
okay.
And so you had an effective 10-meter path length. And I worked with some people at Sloan Kettering Institute because they were very interested in measuring small components in biological materials, fluids. But they didn't have very much. So I designed a cell that had a little teeny tiny little volume, but the light could pass through efficiently. That worked. So I did from 1949 through 1955, I just worked continuously on all kinds of neat things that were involved with the Model 21. And every time I designed something, it would create an additional market because there were these guys who wanted to do gases, there was people that wanted to do biological materials, there were people who wanted to do all kinds of other interesting things. And so the accessory stuff that I worked on, I also designed a reflection attachment, which allowed them to measure reflection of materials. That turned out to be very useful for the tin can industry. You could take a piece of a tin can that had this polymer coating that would keep the tin can from corroding and poisoning the stuff in it.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to know the thickness of that. And so they would actually put that little piece of tin and then reflect light off it, but it would measure the thickness of the chemical composition of the polymers.
Was that in this 49 to 55 time period?
Yeah.
And that was an accessory to the 21?
Yes. I kept adding more and more accessories that opened up the market. During that entire period of time, Paul Wilkes and Van Williams were not interested in the Model 21. And we reached a point where there were so many requests for orders. And I got involved, and customers kept calling me, when can I deliver a system? And it turned out that we were producing like one a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we had requests for five a month, seven a month. So I had to go to Dick Perkin and the purchasing department and then convince them that they should expand the factory because those orders were there.
Mm.
Our deliveries, I think, went out to about 24 months, something like that.
Wow.
And so when I told them that there was possibility of 100 a year, and they start thinking about the numbers and the amount of money that would come in, they realized it was the biggest product that they would ever have, or that they had at that time. So they decided to go ahead. So I worked with the manufacturing people and the purchasing people on establishing the methodology for making the stuff and testing the suppliers and so all that. So I got involved in manufacturing in great detail.
How were you tracking the customer needs to develop new accessories, or were you dreaming up the new accessories and then finding the customer?
We had, I think that Van Williams was kind of the repository for telephone calls from customers.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come in to me and say, "Vince, I'm talking to a guy from such and such a place, and he would like to know whether you could build a such and such, and so that he could do this kind of work." And I say, "Okay, I'll do it." So that's how that happened.
Hmm.
So each time I did one of those, it was a special thing for that one person, but it turned out to be of general value throughout the world. So that was all part of it. So as a 24-year-old with an opportunity, I really took advantage of it. And it was exciting and extremely interesting. And I learned a lot about spectroscopy and design and stuff. So that's how it came into being. Let's see, there are some other things I might mention. Oh, there's a very important thing I have to mention to you. When the original Model 21 was designed by John White, he used the Model 12 on a monochromator.
Mm-hmm.
One of the features of that monochromator was that you could buy the Model 12, and Perkinelmer made a number of crystal prisms that would fit into that.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those prisms would have a different spec range, wavelength range, and so forth. And his the basic prism was a rock salt, NaCl prism, which was very hydroscopic. In other words, it would fog up if you let it up to the atmosphere. So they had a nice little container, and then this screwed on, and then you could screw it in, and then they ended up with prisms for things like calcium fluoride and potassium bromide, mm-hmm. and so forth, that were being sold on that. And it was thought that those same prisms would be used on the Model 21, but the Model 21 had a drive for linear wavelength presentation and other features, and in order to use one of those other prisms, you would have to take the system apart and take it completely apart to put in a new cam,
mm-hmm.
that would then have the linear wavelength.
Okay.
So I was presented with customers who wanted to have these different prisms in the Model 21, and I looked at it and I said, "There's no way that anybody's going to be able to even do this and end up with a system that works." So I decided around 1951, 52, somewhere around that period of time, to completely redesign the whole monochromator.
Hmm.
And I just took all the parts out from a design point of view, and I replaced it with a a unit that mounted the prism and the wavelength cam and all the optics, and with a handle, and you can just pick it up, take it out, and put another one in.
Hmm.
It's called the interchange unit. And this probably increased the sales of the Model 21 by a huge factor, and we ended up with about 90% of the market. There were a couple other companies manufacturing infrared microspectral photometers, including Beckman and a company called Beard Atomic.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Boston.
Right.
We ended up with about 90% of the market at that point, because our ability to do all this other stuff, be able to change, interchange, and so forth. That became a very important factor, because around in 19, I got involved in the sales and manufacturing, and didn't do so much design because the system was pretty much finished. And around 1960, I can't remember exactly when, Pacman announced in January of that year that they were going to show the world's first infrared grating system using diffraction gratings, as kind of prisms. And they were going to announce this to the world, and we would be left with the old prism system method as opposed to diffraction gratings, which had much higher resolution. So I was at that time working on the international operations and so forth. So the guys told me about this problem that had come up, that we were about to lose our market. So I started thinking about it, and then I realized that there was a possible solution, and that was that I was in charge of the applications engineering group, and I was also in charge of special engineering at that time, and I designed many kinds of special instruments, systems, UV spectrophotometers, systems for fluorescence measurements, all kinds of stuff. And so one of the things we did was to take the Model 12 and put a diffraction grating in it for special purpose use. So we had these diffraction gratings around. So I took one of them and I used my reflectance attachment that I had designed for the Model 21 and looked at the reflectivity of grating at normal instrument. And it turned out that in the range where it was normally useful, there was practically no reflection. And then when you get out to longer wavelengths, the reflectivity went way up. And I said, my goodness, that's interesting. I could take the interchange unit and I could just put the grating in place of the mirror there. And then we would have a grating and prism and all the resolution of the grating and all of the resolution of the prism. And we would have the standard scan that was accepted by the Model 21 with the paper, which Beckman did not have. They had a very crude scanning method. And that was January, and we introduced that at Pittsburgh Conference and Competition with Beckman 2 months later, because it was just taking this interchange unit, which already existed, and just putting a grating in it and making it work. That saved the bacon, because Beckman didn't even got an order, because our system was so superior. Then 1 year later, they introduced the first Model 421 or 321, or whatever it was called, which had a full-blown fancy grating system. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Walter Slavin was involved in that part of that design at that time. Since I was running applications engineering, we also got involved in gas chromatography.
Right.
Nat Brenner, you know Nat Brenner?
No, I don't.
Nathaniel Brenner. He was hired by me because we had gotten into gas chromatography, to do work in that area. And there's a whole other story that's very hard for me to tell this thing because it's politically so interesting. I keep mentioning Van Williams and Paul Wilkes, who are really nice guys and smart and so forth, but they were not interested in the Model 21, even at this stage.
Why is that, do you think?
They thought that the big thing for infrared was quantitative analysis.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, Paul Wilkes is only interested in quantitative analysis with infrared. He's built a lot of instruments to do measurements.
Right.
At Columbia University in New York, there was a professor, his name was Halford. He had a graduate student, his name was Savitsky, Abe Savitsky, who had designed an attachment to the Model 12C which allowed it to become a double beam spectrophotometer. And Van Williams and Paul Wilkes got all excited about this. So they hired Abe Savitsky to design a product to replace the Model 21. That was around 1953. So I'm still all by myself pushing this ahead. It hadn't really fully gotten full wind yet, Model 21. So they decided that that was not a very good design, and therefore they were going to design it. So they took what was called the Halford Savitsky system, and they started a project and hired a bunch of engineers to design a new Perkin-Elmer infrared, double beam infrared spectrophotometer. It's called the Model 13. That was they chose the wrong number because it never worked. And they worked on it for 2 or 3 years, and it was introduced. In the meantime, the Model 21 was just taking off at that point with all the accessories I'd designed and so forth. So there was a lot of political stuff going on at Perkin-Elmer.
Hmm.
I was on all by myself on one side doing all this design and pushing all this stuff and working with, they now started to hire some sales guys. And then Van Zandt Williams and Paul Wilkes were pushing this Model 13, thinking that it was going to replace the Model 21.
Hmm.
And it didn't work. It literally did not work. It had some very complicated electronics and so forth. So there was a prototype build that was introduced, and then they never did go into production.
Hmm.
They canceled the project. And so I was running applications engineering as well as doing design work at that time. And so they put this prototype of the Model 13 double beam infrared spectrophotometer in the applications lab just in case somebody would come along and be interested in it. So I became interested in it. And I converted it into a universal spectrophotometer. I put a quartz prism in so it could run all the way down into the UV,
mm-hmm.
from around 220 nanometers out to 2000 nanometers. And then you put the Roxall prism in. Now you could run from two microns
okay.
out to 15 microns. You can put the KBR prism in, which is all set up for that. And you can go all the way out to 25 to 30 microns. So here was this world's only spectrophotometer that could scan all the way from the UV throughout the entire infrared. And I made all the modifications and designed the ability to flip mirrors that would put in the UV source and then the infrared source and the prisms and so forth.
Were the three prisms in there? Or did you swap them out?
Well, it had the system where you could take
okay.
a prism and put it in
yeah.
very quickly. See,
okay.
that was all.
Okay.
It was not linear wavelength system. That was one of the big drawbacks of the Model 13. But it was also, you could get a reproducible scale. And it had, it was double beam. So you could get rid of background absorption. So I introduced the Model 13U. And it worked quite well. Did not have the nice performance or all the accessories, but for the semiconductor people who were working on semiconductors and electronic devices and all kinds of laser things and so forth and so on, this was a marvelous machine. The Model 21 could not be used very well for that, but the Model 13U. And in your picture, in the picture you sent me,
oh, we have
one. A Model 13U.
Yep.
That was the.
I think we had one with a microscope attachment.
Right.
Are we talking about?
It's on the seventh floor of the building right now. But it's one of the universal spectrophotometer with
okay.
a microscope attachment.
So. Wunderwerk, being those German guys do a good job. So here's the Model 13U.
Oh, okay.
And with all the stuff that was added.
That was
and
in
then,
the AA room. That's why I didn't even really focus in on that.
Then this is another kind of a product here that's on the table here. And this is the infrared microscope. But anyway, the 13U became extremely popular in Europe. And finally, the U.S. sales guys realized that it had value, so they sold it. So the Model 13 finally went into production as the Model 13U. And I think they probably sold upwards of 100 of those. And so that's the story of the Model 13U. Mm. I got a lot of experience in UV spectrophotometry by designing that, and I found out all the details of detectors and prisms and all the stuff that goes on in UV and how you get good results and how you get good resolution, which I use in this company, of course. Around 1951, Van Williams came to me and said that he had been asked by several workers in the field to design an infrared microscope as an attachment to the Model 12C.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gone to one of the optical designers at Perkinelmer, a very famous guy, his name is Abe Offner, O-F-F-N-E-R, who became famous later on because he designed the very, very famous microline system for doing integrated circuit stuff, and was very brilliant design. But he was a young designer, and Van Williams had asked him whether he could think about designing an infrared microscope. And he came up with an optical design. And Van Williams told him that I was going to do the design, so when as soon as he finished the optics, then he should give me the design, and I would do the rest of the design. It was a very complicated thing. So I sat down at my board, and I designed this infrared microscope attachment to the Model 12C, where a light coming through the final slit of that monochromator would then, I put a mirror in there and it would direct it up and it had this great big condenser lens and then a little tiny area for sample and then an objective lens and it went up and then the whole idea of the design was to send the light back down to the detector. So I designed that based on Abe Offner's design and I couldn't make it work. I could only get about 5% of the original signal through the system.
Mm-hmm.
So we were about to junk it, and I came up with a good idea. I suggested that what we should do is that we should put in another detector, saving the $300 or $400 or whatever it was, by trying to use the same detector to do both jobs was wrong anyway. So I put a second detector immediately after where the beam came out, and we had an eyepiece where you could look at stuff. And then we had about 50 or 60% of the signal.
Okay.
And that made it work. So then that prototype worked very nicely, and I recorded a lot of spectra using the Model 12C with the microscope, and then they sent the design to a man named Brusky, B-R-U-E-S-K-E, Brusky, B-R-U-E-S-K-E, forgotten his name. His job at Perkinelmer, working with Dick Perkin, was to design astronomical telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
And he had designed some of the world's great telescopes. So they asked him to do the production design of this microscope system because he had done the original design, as I found out, of the original parts of the Model 12 system. So he knew it pretty well. So he came back with some drawings, and then we took those drawings and then we built was called the Model 85 infrared microscope attachment, which you see in this picture here. And that was the world's first infrared microscope attachment to the Model 12C. The first infrared microscope as part of an infrared spectrophotometer as an accessory. It was not possible to take the Model 21 and build a... I shouldn't say that. It was thought that it was not possible to build an infrared microscope into the Model 21. That was going to be my next job, was to figure out how to do that. I worked with another new engineer on the testing of the final version of the Model 85 microscope. And his name was Horace Ziegler, S-E-I-G-L-E-R. He was an excellent designer, and he was a physicist, but he knew design.
Mm-hmm.